From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Tuesday edition, curfews will be in force in major cities across the nation tonight, including here in our nation's capital, as the unrest continues. Last night, before the curfew went into effect here in D.C., President Trump spoke to the violence.
These are not acts of peaceful protest. These are acts of domestic terror. The destruction of innocent life and the spilling of innocent blood is an offense to humanity and a crime against God.
FRC will be hosting a special video broadcast entitled Arise this evening from our headquarters here in Washington, D.C. The one-hour event will include elected leaders, pastors, and others from across the nation. One of tonight's guests, North Carolina Congressman Mark Walker, will be here later on Washington Watch. So what is the path forward to healing our hurting nation? That will be the topic of my conversation with Bishop Vincent Matthews, Jr., pastor of Tabernacle Church of God in Christ in South Haven, Mississippi, and World Missions President for Church of God in Christ, the largest African-American Pentecostal denomination in the country. He'll be joining us in just a moment. And today, President Trump signed an executive order that has been in the works for months that is aimed at advancing international religious freedom. The Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom, Sam Brownback, will be here with the details. Also today, nine states and the District of Columbia held elections. With more and more states moving toward mail-in balloting, what must be done to ensure the integrity of these elections? Jason Sneed, Executive Director of Honest Elections, is here later on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. And again, let me remind you about tonight's special event, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, Arise. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. About this time yesterday, President Trump addressed the crisis that has enveloped our nation from the Rose Garden before walking across the street to the St. John's Church. It's located across the street from the White House. This is what he had to say.
All Americans were rightly sickened and revolted by the brutal death of George Floyd. My administration is fully committed that for George and his family, justice will be served. He will not have died in vain. But we cannot allow the righteous cries and peaceful protesters to be drowned out by an angry mob. The biggest victims of the rioting are peace-loving citizens in our poorest communities. And as their president, I will fight to keep them safe. I will fight to protect you. I am your president of law and order and an ally of all peaceful protesters.
Joining me now to talk more about this, Bishop Vincent Matthews, Jr., International Missions President for COGIC, the largest African-American Pentecostal denomination. He's also pastor of Tabernacle Church in New Haven. He's joining us now. Pastor Vincent, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, Tony. It's an honor and a pleasure to be with you. Thank you so much.
I don't know why I was thinking Mississippi. I apologize for that.
You're correct.
My notes said somebody. I had Connecticut. I apologize. Well, good.
You're a neighbor. No problem.
You're a neighbor there
in
Mississippi.
We're right at Memphis.
Well, let me ask you this, because the president addressed this in his comments. I wrote a piece that was published today about this, where I think the lawlessness that is being displayed in our streets is the same lawlessness that led to the death of George Floyd. It's a rejection of truth and the law, and that puts our entire nation at risk.
I agree with that. I think that, first of all, the indefensible, reprehensible events of the killing of George Floyd is just appalling all around the world, and it is rooted in sin. And those who seek to peacefully protest, we had pastors who peacefully protest, and then anarchists came out of nowhere smashing and doing all types of things. It is also rooted in sin, as well as a rejection of truth. I agree with you on that. We have a huge problem, not only in America, but around the world, but more specifically right here in the United States.
So, Bishop, what is the way forward? I mean, we seem to find ourselves back at this same position time and time again.
Yeah, you're right. And I think the reason that we're back at this same position is, for many people, is incomprehensible, the depth of man's inhumanity demand that we're witnessing. And thanks to smartphones, it's being recorded, unfortunately. I think the problem is that for many, it's no surprise. It's a hurtful thing, but it's no surprise. And we need to, as a church, not black church, white church, no, as God's church, recognize, just as John the Baptist did at the opening of the New Testament, as the last Old Testament prophet, not only preaching the kingdom, but preaching truth to power and shifting those who are in systems. He talked to the tax collectors and the soldiers and told them that justice must be important. And I think that's important for all Christians, to speak out for those who are disenfranchised and who have challenges in our society.
I mean, these issues are real. Clearly, there are those that want to exploit them and take advantage of them, but that cannot lead us to ignore the underlying issues that we have yet to address as a nation. And I want to bring it back to what you just said. I think the church has to be at the tip of the spear and addressing it, because the only thing I believe that can bring people together in a genuine, abiding fashion, I'm not talking about a tolerance. We got to go beyond tolerance. We have to go to what's called love. And that happens, I believe, the only true way that can happen is when we're in the bond of Christ.
My brother, Tony, my brother, you are absolutely hitting the nail on the head. The love of Christ binds us through koinonia, a fellowship with one another. And that koinonia means that we have something in common. It's not our skin color. That's superficial. It's not our ethnicity. It is the love of Christ that binds us together. And when that love is shared with others, they will know that we're his disciples by our love for one another, how we love others. The love of Christ, the agape love that we share with others, will impact our society. And we look beyond the demonic designations given through what we have learned. I read your article, and over not only the past 50 years, what has been taught going all the way back to social Darwinism, separating races and things of that sort, have come to a conclusion right here, what we see happening in our society.
Yeah, this didn't happen overnight. It was,
yes, sir.
It's been decades, century in the making. I agree with you. I think it does go back to the teaching of Darwin and the survival of the fittest, and that we are all here just by chance, not by the hand of a creative God who loves us and sent his son to redeem us. That changes the whole dynamic of a society. How do we get back to where we need to be?
Well, we need to really seek and share with the world the true gospel. And that's why I mentioned John the Baptist, the gospel that John preached, the gospel that Jesus preached, the gospel when Jesus in Matthew 9 looked at Jerusalem and saw the people as sheep without a shepherd. When we see that there are disenfranchised, marginalized individuals in our society, not to just say, hey, these people must pull themselves up by the bootstrap, but to say that Jesus is the answer, that he can strengthen you. He is the one who empowers you. And we share that gospel and go and let them know that the theocratic rule of God, the kingdom of heaven, is at hand, and that they can be free, whether you're black, white, Latino, Asian, or First Nation. We must share the gospel.
Bishop Matthews, I spend my time, you know, looking at the survey data, looking at, polling. It's a part of what I do in terms of not how we make decisions, but it's just trying to figure out where people are. And what I see time and time again, just like what's happening on this conversation here today, you and I, because of our relationship with Jesus Christ, I would venture, and I was thinking about this as I was preparing for this interview with you, I bet we agree on probably 90 to 95%, maybe more, of the issues that we deal with.
That's right.
But you wouldn't know that by how the media would describe white evangelicals and black evangelicals.
Yeah, and that's why we must not allow the narrative to be defined by the world. The world cannot define the narrative, because we have, of course, really, there's 7.5 billion people in the world, 7,500 languages in the world, but there are only two cultures in this world. There's a culture of Christ and a culture of Satan. And you're right. We may not share the same DNA, but we share the same Father. and we share the same values. And those are biblical values, and we must not be informed and influenced by the systems or the doctrines of demons, if you will allow me to say that. No, that's the truth. But we must find that bond together, regardless of what the differences that the world say, and move forward and glorify God. We must. You're absolutely right.
And I know from the data that that is a fact, that
yes,
black evangelicals, white evangelicals agree on almost
yes,
everything. They stand out because they have a biblically centric view of the world. Now, the problem, I think, the challenge is, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the media is intentionally trying to keep those two groups separate.
Well, the media is keeping us separate, but then also I think we must be intentional about breaking those barriers. Just as I'm on your show with you now, we must be intentional, not just swapping pulpits, but really seeking to see what we can do on the ground, in our cities, and in the areas where we are to serve humanity and demonstrate. Remember that scripture.
Yeah.
They will know that
yeah,
we're disciples by our love for one another. We,
yeah,
as we demonstrate that love, the same love that was cross-cultural on the day of Pentecost, those who sent out Paul and Barnabas in Antioch, when we see that it transcends, when the world sees that you and I can not only get along but work together and break down the walls of denomination and ethnicity, then we defy what is being portrayed in the media and outside.
And I think that is essential to the preservation
yes,
of this republic.
Yes.
Without it, I don't think our nation has a future. I mean, I think we can patch it together. We can keep limping along. And I'm not saying that everybody in America has got to be a believer and is going to be a believer. But what I'm saying is that if the church will model it, as you just said, it can bring the healing and the way forward for a nation.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're right. And as we do that, I mean, we will be able to help others to be free and to enjoy the peace of God, which passes all understanding, in spite of the differences. You think of Tony, and you know better than I. You look at somewhere like Somalia, where they're fighting and have been in anarchy for a long time. All of those people are related. They're the same ethnicity, different clans. We will always find a difference. We will always find something that divides us.
Good point.
It is the bond of Christ that will unite us, in spite of whatever outside differences that we may have.
It is way past time that that message becomes a consistent message of the church, not just from the pulpits, but in practice from the pews and every place that we live. Bishop, as always, great to have you on the program. Thank you for coming on the program. Thank you for declaring truth to the nation.
Thank you, Tony, for demonstrating that love. And as we work together prayerfully, our conversation has blessed someone. It's an honor, as always, to be with you. Thank you so much.
Well, I look forward to literally linking arms with you moving forward on behalf of America.
Let's do it to the glory of God.
Amen. Bishop Vincent Matthews, Jr., International Missions President for COGIC, the largest African-American Pentecostal denomination. Also pastors in South Haven, Mississippi. All right, when we come back, the president today signing an executive order advancing international religious freedom. Number one priority for in our foreign policy has been the advancement of religious freedom. The ambassador large for religious freedom, Sam Brownback, is here next. Don't go away.
As coronavirus restrictions begin to ease, many Americans are grappling with how to adapt to the changing times. The last few months have transformed how worshipers think about church and how they are fed spiritually. While many churches are conducting services through live streams, drive-in services, and other means, questions still remain. What practical steps can we take? Are current restrictions appropriate? Do these restrictions violate the Constitution or religious freedom protections? Family Research Council has a new publication discussing religious liberty issues and offering practical guidelines for how churches and houses of worship can begin to operate as our country opens back up. Visit frc.org/churchguidelines to view this resource and learn more. As always, visit frc.org/church for our full list of resources for churches in the time of coronavirus.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community and keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you happen to be on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. Let me remind you, coming up tonight, a special broadcast, a video broadcast from the Family Research Council. You can watch it on our website. You can watch it on Facebook Live. Arise. It's addressing the current crisis enveloping America and praying. And we'll have elected leaders, we'll have pastors from across the nation joining us, 7 p.m. Eastern time. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Speaking of prayer, speaking of the freedom to pray, the freedom to practice your faith, no administration in my lifetime has done more to advance religious freedom, both here at home and abroad. And I can say that with knowledge, as the chairman of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, I see what this administration is doing. I'm a part of it. Well, today, the president issued an executive order further advancing and kind of consolidating the efforts at the Department of State and elsewhere when it comes to international religious freedom. And joining me now to talk about this is my good friend, Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom at the State Department, Ambassador Sam Brownback. Sam, welcome back to Washington Watch.
All right, thanks, Tony. Appreciate it. And yes, today was a big milestone day. No administration has ever done an executive order on international religious freedom. And then one is really expansive as what the one the administration did today. This is a big day on issues regarding religious freedom and particularly those abroad.
And you can tell when an administration is putting teeth into something because they actually put money into it. And this is directing our money because, you speak very loudly internationally with your money. And this is directing USAID in as America's international relief organization to put money toward programs that actually advance international religious freedom.
Yes. And this is another, just really huge move taking place is to tie our development aid in with part of our values. And one of our core values is religious freedom. And by this executive order, the president's saying within the next 180 days, I want a plan from State Department and USAID on how you're going to integrate and expand and really kind of feather into all of statecraft and all of the foreign policy apparatus and our development money, this concept of international religious freedom and how we're going to expand it and target the countries, too, there are special watch list countries or countries of particular concern that are the worst of the worst actors on religious persecution, how we're going to target them to really force them to step up and do a better job on religious freedom.
In fact, this calls for making sure that international religious freedom is integrated into our diplomacy. So when conversations are being had with these countries, and many times diplomats, you know, don't want to touch this issue, this is not an issue they want to talk about, it's saying, look, this has to be a part of the conversation.
It does. If an entity of U.S. government, say Treasury Department, Agriculture Department, has foreign apparatuses, and they do, they've got to engage on religious freedom issues as well. And in case some of your listeners are thinking, you know, is this too much? Are we putting too much on this one topic? I just would remind people, this is just a foundational human right. You get this one right, and the others tend to flourish. The ability to speak, the ability to communicate, the ability to assembly, because this is just such a hard one for a lot of countries and in a lot of places. So that's why we really want to put a lot on this one. This is your fundamental. You get your fundamentals right, you can do more. You get your fundamentals wrong, things sink faster. And so this is a big addition on religious freedom that happened today by this administration, and I think it's warranted, and I think it'll pay dividends for the United States and our foreign policy and how these other countries act and the freedoms of their citizens around the world.
Well, there's a growing body of research that shows just what you talked about, that religious freedom is foundational, and when you get this right, the other pieces fall into place. You begin to see more economic freedom. Therefore, you have more prosperous societies. In fact, the opening, one of the opening lines of this executive order in the first section says, religious freedom, America's first freedom, is a moral and national security imperative. When a country has religious freedom, it's more stable and less of a threat to the rest of the world.
It is. And you also, Tony, you don't have to look any further than our growing difficulties with China to see kind of an exact opposite on this. Here's China governed by Communist Party, officially atheist, at war with faith in China, and then projecting that out in a number of other places around the world. And it produces a lot more conflict, a lot more difficulty. Now, the Chinese have certainly learned how to grow an economy. You can't take that away. But you can point out that the system that they've used is one that depends upon just really a kind of a narrow ruling party. And it depends on people being willing to bypass their right to freedom of religion. You know, there in a lot of places in China, you can do whatever you want other than go to church or go to your religious institution. That's the one thing they don't want, because they see a threat there from some other entity that can be organized, they believe, against them.
And one final aspect before we ran out of time, talking about teeth, this also calls upon the Secretary of the Treasury, in consultation with the Secretary of State, to impose sanctions under the Magnitsky Act, which the administration has been pretty good about doing that, but not a lot on religious freedom. So this would be a big advancement in using those tools to encourage religious freedom.
Those are strong tools. And typically in the past, prior administrations, you know, religious freedom would be relegated second or third tier often. And you might use those sorts of tools on security concerns, but not on religious freedom concerns.
Well, we are grateful for the president signing this executive order, advancing once again international religious freedom. And, of course, very grateful for you, Ambassador Brownback, for the work that you're doing internationally carrying out those policies.
Happy to do it. God bless you, Tony, and your listeners.
All right. Ambassador Sam Brownback, international religious freedom. All right, when we come back, as I mentioned tonight, Arise, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, we're going to be having a special video broadcast on what's happening here in our nation's capital in praying for our nation. Congressman Mark Walker will be joining us tonight, and he joins us next here on Washington Watch. Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community. And keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So good to have you with us today. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, coming up tonight in just a couple of hours, FRC's virtual event, Arise. We'll kick it off here at our headquarters in Washington, D.C. What's this event all about? Well, let me tell you, it started, we were going to be talking about the we're coming to the end of our fiscal year. We're going to talk about what we have been able to accomplish because of the support of our partners. But with the events that have occurred in the last couple of weeks, last week and a half, it's necessitated us changing. And so we've changed our focus. And tonight, we're actually going to have a virtual prayer meeting. We're going to be joined by members of Congress. We're going to be joined by pastors and leaders from across the country, really focusing on the crisis that is before us as a nation, but not just talking about the problems. We want to lay out the solutions, and part of it is God's people praying. And joining us now is one of our guests tonight who is going to be with us, a familiar voice on the program. He represents the 6th Congressional District of North Carolina. He is the vice chair of the House Republican Conference, former pastor, great friend of the Family Research Council, and we're so thankful to have Congressman Mark Walker join us. Mark, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Tony, it's our privilege to be with you folks and looking forward to tonight.
Now, the focus of our conversation tonight is going to be the issue of the underlying racial division that is fueling this. It's not the sole source of the problem. There's much more. We're seeing years, decades of whittling away at America's moral, biblical foundation, removing God from our public conscience. But in its place are coming up all of these evils, and one of those is the racial division, racial intolerance that we see in our society, and that's been a passion of yours.
Yes, it has. Even as a pastor, working with Dr. Gary Chapman and others, this was something that was always important, and I was able to work in the different inner cities of places like Cleveland and New York and Baltimore. And that's one of the things that I wanted to take with me because I began to see over the last few decades as a pastor's kid myself the void that was being created by taking Jesus out of our culture, whether it was politics, education. And even today, in many of our church settings, sometimes we hear a gospel, we hear a message that is not incorporated, I think, the fundamentals of how we're to view our brothers and sisters across all the communities. And it concerns me in what this ends up resulting in is what we're seeing right now, an uprising of racial division.
The church plays a fundamental role in this. I mean, I know that you serve in Congress, you've served as a pastor, but you don't check your faith at the door. That same faith that compelled you to serve in the ministry there in the local community is the same faith that compelled you to run and serve the nation as a congressman, and it's the same faith that guides you in the policy decisions that you make and helping you discern the problems around us. And so you bringing that as really the center, the glue, the cement that can bring our society together. And without that, it's going to be very difficult to heal this divide.
There's no question about it. You know, just as you were framing the question or the comment there, I thought back of Jesus and the woman at the well. Jesus didn't come in and say, "Hey, I'm the Messiah." No, he built a relationship. He didn't run from the truth. But he talked to her about life and about things and culture. And I was just thinking about how much that's important for us to be able to have any kind of long-term success, first from our faith perspective, but then to build our genuine relationships that are cultivated from our worldview. And that means sometimes just showing up, maybe when you're not the keynote speaker or sitting at the last table, just loving and listening on people that God has intersected our path. I think it's the only way. And we're privileged to be able to win some awards from the different historical Black college and universities, to go on campus. We get a chance to speak and do commencement addresses. Wonderful people. So many friends, African American community, they're God-fearing. They work hard, and they want their families to have the same opportunities that our children has. But there is a divide. And sometimes it's intentional evil that's creating that division. Sometimes it's part of our history. But I think we're called as believers in Jesus, just like the example that I gave you early, from the Samaritan woman to Jesus, a different race, a different culture. We're called to bridge that divide, but we have to be intentional in our relationships in doing so. Tony, I really believe that.
What would you say that believers, Christians, those that are listening to this program across America, what do they need to be doing right now?
I think we have to reach out and take the lead on this. Tony, this is genuine pain. You can argue the statistics and the data and say, well, it shouldn't be this way, it shouldn't be that way. But I will tell you, if you'll take it from me and being in these communities day in and day out, there's legitimate pain and there's a legitimate fear. And until we wrap our arms around these people and love the different communities and see all of us, all of our communities, the way that Jesus sees us and sees the communities, I don't know that we resolve this. So the action steps would be to be intentional. Find some people that you may not always have over to dinner. Find some people that may not always be part of your social culture and say, you know what, I love you in the name of Jesus. I want to listen. You tell me what I can do to help. Now, it doesn't mean that we have to throw out our conservatism, our faith, or anything else, but it does take some intentionality on our part.
Well, Mark, and we'll give them the rest tonight when they join us because we're out of time for this afternoon, but I want to thank you for joining us, and I look forward to having you with us tonight at the Arise event. Folks, to find out more, go to TonyPerkins.com. Mark, thanks so much.
Thank you, Tony.
As coronavirus restrictions begin to ease, many Americans are grappling with how to adapt to the changing times. The last few months have transformed how worshipers think about church and how they are fed spiritually. While many churches are conducting services through live streams, drive-in services, and other means, questions still remain. What practical steps can we take? Are current restrictions appropriate? Do these restrictions violate the Constitution or religious freedom protections? Family Research Council has a new publication discussing religious liberty issues and offering practical guidelines for how churches and houses of worship can begin to operate as our country opens back up. Visit frc.org/churchguidelines to view this resource and learn more. As always, visit frc.org/church for our full list of resources for churches in the time of coronavirus.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community and keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app. This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad that you are with us on this Tuesday afternoon. All right, I think we're having a little problem with the TonyPerkins.com website. I think too many people trying to get to it. I don't know. But let me give you the address for tonight's event. Either if you're watching, if you're on Facebook, you'll get a notification from FRC. But if not, it's frc.org/arise. That's A-R-I-S-E, arise. frc.org/arise, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Whole host of folks you'll normally hear on the radio program, members of Congress, elected officials, and pastors from across the nation as we address what's happening in our nation. Again, frc.org/arise. Also, let me go back to we have Ambassador Brown back a few moments ago talking about international religious freedom. Again, want to remind you, we have a special publication available for you that just kind of lays out everything this administration has done on issues like religious freedom, on the sanctity of human life. It's about, I think, almost 7 pages long now. And if you'd like a copy, a PDF form that you can share with your friends to show that policy matters, you know, move this upcoming election off personalities onto policies, which I think is where we need to focus, and very impactful policies. Text me at the number 51555, 51555. That's 51 three fives. The word actions, that's plural, actions. And I'll send you that document that you can share with your friends and see it. It's all documented, no commentary, date, time, when these policies were put in place. Quite impressive. All right. Today, actually, we had, I think it was like 9 states and the District of Columbia held elections. More and more states are moving toward mail-in balloting, especially during the primary seasons that were pushed back because of the coronavirus. But many are concerned, and I put myself in that category, that this is a dry run for the fall's election where you'll see a bigger push for mail-in balloting, universal
mail-in balloting. Why is that a problem? What can we do to ensure the integrity of our elections? Well, Jason Sneed is Executive Director of Honest Elections, and he's here with us. Jason, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right. So I think most of those nine states that had elections today in the District of Columbia had a pretty aggressive mail-in balloting provision in their primary. We see more and more states moving in that direction, do we not?
We do. So as most of us might agree, would be sensible enough, states have been developing contingency plans and accommodations to change some of the ways in which we vote in light of COVID-19. Now, some of these policies, as I said, make eminent sense, equipping poll workers with PPE, encouraging social distancing by moving voting locations, and expanding absentee voting in order to ensure that particularly vulnerable voters have an option to request an absentee ballot and vote from the safety of their own homes if they so choose. But what we've also been seeing is an increasingly aggressive push, particularly from activists and politicians on the left, to mandate and rush into place an all-mail election in which ballots would be sent to every voter registration on file and in which various voter verification and safeguards that are designed to secure elections and prevent them from being manipulated in any way are removed. Ballot harvesting is legalized. All of this is to say that there's an effort to essentially reshape the electoral process. It's being positioned as simply expanding absentee voting, but is really quite a different animal altogether. And I think that you're right to be concerned about the push for this sort of policy change in November.
Now, I want to make sure our listeners understand what we're talking about here. I mean, look, if somebody has a legitimate issue, they're sick, they are in a high risk. They're in a high-risk category, and they need to protect their health. And so say, all right, you can look, that's a legitimate option to request a mail-in ballot and so that you're not putting yourself at risk or putting others at risk. That's not what we're talking about here in most of these jurisdictions. What you said, and I want people to make sure they heard it, is that in some of these jurisdictions, they're pushing. In fact, I know my home state of Louisiana didn't go this far, and so now they're being sued by the Southern Poverty Law Center because they're not sending every person a ballot in the mail, which is where you can have rampant fraud, and it is very difficult to ensure that those ballots are filled out by the individual whose name is on that ballot, and in fact, the ballots are turned in.
Well, that's absolutely right. Traditional absentee voting has a number of safeguards in place, which this push for mandatory vote by mail are attempting to undermine. So right off the bat, absentee voters typically have to request a ballot. And that is a safeguard which allows elections officials to vet the accuracy of their voter rolls and ensure that they're sending ballots, first of all, to the right address, and secondly, that they're not wasting taxpayers' dollars printing and mailing ballots either to the wrong address, to people who have no intention of voting, or to people who are disqualified, all of which, of course, also creates the possibility of election fraud by leading to large numbers of unclaimed ballots being transmitted and then left behind. A few years ago, researchers at the Pew Center did a study of America's voter registration rolls and found that they're in generally terrible shape and that one in eight, 24 million voter registrations in all, are inaccurate or outdated. And so this push to automatically mail ballots, it's often characterized as what's the problem with sending ballots to every voter? Well, the problem is that a lot of the people in whose name these ballots would be sent out are dead, are disqualified from voting, or have moved away, which would lead, again, to a sizable number of ballots that would be sent out. And without the steps in place, without voter identification laws, without signature matching, without the protocols and procedures that are being used and used reliably to ensure that the person casting the ballot is the qualified voter, then you run into a possibility in which those ballots could be taken and could be voted illegally, and then the state would have very few tools available to it to detect that fraud. So there's lots of problems like this with vote by mail. They're avoidable. They're entirely avoidable. But unfortunately, the politics of this whole thing has entered into it, and so now this push has become almost a litmus test on the left. And I think that if we go down that road, we will regret it in November.
So, Jason Sneed, the right to vote that Americans have, is that not a very sacred and precious right?
Well, it's absolutely. It's the foundation of our democracy. It's the foundational civil rights. It's the way in which Americans exercise their voice in the democratic process. The electoral process is really the heart of democracy, and just like a human being, that heart has to be alive and functioning in order for that process to work. And so, if you introduce a whole slew of challenges to the electoral process, to the integrity and security of the ballot, if you open the door to widespread fraud, to voter confusion, it's chaos, then I think that what you ultimately do is you risk the legitimacy of the electoral process. And if you do that, then democracy itself will slowly but surely cease to function. So that's why my group is here, because we believe that we need to protect the right of every American to participate in free and fair elections. And that means not just casting a ballot, but being assured that that ballot is going to be properly counted. And when we move towards a vote-by-mail system without safeguards, without protocols that we know stop fraud, when we introduce problems that are entirely avoidable, and when we avoid the risk of confusion that results from trying to impose sweeping changes to elections mere months before they're taking place, I think that what we're doing is, we're opening up the possibility of some significant problems in November, and my group really wants to avoid that.
Well, and I would agree, Jason. I think that voting is a sacred right. It is a duty. It is something that people, we often take for granted. Most people in the world don't have that right. And so I think it's something that, and we don't do it that often. I mean, at most in a election year like this year, you might do it two times, maybe three if you have a separation of local elections. So we're not talking about that often that you're voting. I just think that if you can get in the car and go down to Walmart, or you can go to the grocery store, or you can drive to the bank, you should be able to drive to a polling location and cast your vote and know for certain that you are the person casting the vote.
Well, if it were up to me personally, I would absolutely agree with you that people ought to show up to the polls, provided, of course, that they can. There's always going to be people who are absent from a jurisdiction or, for whatever particular reason, age or infirmity, won't be able to make it. And so that's why you have these sorts of safety valves in the form of early voting and absentee voting to ensure that everyone who wants to and is qualified to vote can vote. But there is certainly a lot to be said for showing up at the polls on election day. And unfortunately, I think what we're seeing is that in light of COVID-19, there's this push to exploit the pandemic to launch what really amounts to a foundational change in how elections are administered and really what constitutes an election. Some of the policies that we see, the push to essentially do away with Election Day and replace it with 6 weeks of early voting, coupled with automatic mailing of ballots, coupled with vote harvesting. I mean, that's a significant shift from what most Americans expect when they think about elections. And, I think that we really need to be mindful of the fact that voting matters. Elections are important. I think Americans agree with that. And so we should avoid unnecessary changes. We should certainly avoid taking advantage of a crisis to push a political agenda in the election space. And we should commit ourselves to making changes in November that will allow people to vote safely, but will still preserve the integrity of the process. We say we need to make it easy to vote and hard to cheat. And that is absolutely true, and there's no reason that that's not true in November.
So, Jason Sneed, very quickly, what can folks do that are concerned about this? What actions can they take? How can they team up with what you are doing at Honest Elections to make sure that elections are honest?
Well, I invite anyone interested in this issue to check out our website, honestelections.org. We're also very active on social media, where folks can follow us at Honest Elections and see all of the latest updates. We flag news articles. We also flag what my group is doing in the court and in the realm of public advocacy to raise awareness about the problems of some of the vote-by-mail and other issues in this space. And, of course, I encourage voters to make their concerns known to elected officials who are, after all, ultimately responsible for writing the laws that govern our elections. We really need to be pushing to preserve the fundamental fairness of the electoral process. And that will only happen when voters say that it's time to take election security seriously. It's time for us to stop casting elections as illegitimate when we lose them. We have to do more. In fact, we have to do everything we can to protect and secure the foundation of democracy.
All right. Jason Snead, thanks so much for joining us today. Appreciate the work that you're doing on the election front. Very, very important. And folks, check it out. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Follow links over to what Jason is doing at Honest Elections. All right, before we run out of time here, I've asked Vice President of Policy Government Affairs, Travis Weber, to join me. He just stopped in the studio because there's a confirmation hearing taking place tomorrow for what is currently the acting OMB director, Office of Management Budget. Russ Vogt. Now, you might recall that I think it was 2 years ago.
It was June 2017.
In June of 2017, he was attacked by Bernie Sanders when he was being confirmed for the number two spot because of his faith. And I think we got a short clip of that exchange.
I don't know how many Muslims there are in America. I really don't know. Probably a couple of million. Are you suggesting that all of those people stand condemned? What about Jews? They stand condemned too?
Senator, I'm a Christian.
I understand you are a Christian, but this country is made up of people who are not just. I understand that Christianity is the majority religion, but there are other people who have different religions in this country and around the world.
There is much more to that clip. We don't have time to play it, but are we going to see a repeat of that tomorrow?
Tony, we'll wait and see. This is an important nomination, though. Mr. Vogt is going to be in a hearing tomorrow for his confirmation of his role as director of Office of Management and Budget. So we'll see if Sanders tries the same line of questioning. Certainly what appears to be a religious test for office, questioning his theological beliefs that arose out of a theological discussion in some blogging he had done in past years, question of theology. And Sanders is off out of line. He's off track questioning his theology for a public role when that theology had nothing to do with whether Russ Vogt could serve the public well in this role. So we have to see if Sanders or other senators try the same line of attack, which is unconstitutional according to Article 6 of the Constitution. No religious test for public office. I will be monitoring that hearing tomorrow afternoon and see what happens.
I think Bernie Sanders is reflective of where the left is going when it comes to faith.
A lot of antagonism to faith. We have a publication on the no religious test clause and antagonism to faith in public life, not just Russ Vogt, but others. We need to stay on top of this issue.
All right. Well, Travis Weber, you'll join us back here tomorrow with an update on what happens in that committee hearing tomorrow. And folks, I hope you will tune back in again tomorrow. Remember, tonight, the Arise event. Go to TonyPerkins.com, FRC.org/Arise. That's it. All right, folks, until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where it says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.